Good afternoon and welcome to Transformational Women Radio. This is your host, Hannah Anam. Each week we interview some amazing leaders who are transforming their businesses, their teams, their communities, and we get their nuggets and insights about how they create this transformational change. And today we have three amazing women that I'll introduce you to in turn. And our topic of discussion today is social media. And we have experts from three very different and interesting backgrounds that I know will amaze you with their insights. But also one of the topics that I know of, I want to kind of give them the heads up on is, tell us what works in social media and, importantly, what doesn't work, because there is so much to learn and everything is changing so much in social media. I know entrepreneurs in general also want to know about what they must do now in order to grow their businesses. So we're looking forward to that. We'll start off, actually, by talking to Judy Knight. Judy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Hannah.
Judy is has a fascinating background. Judy, you're a successful entrepreneur who you've recreated yourself several times over. You are a PhD clinical psychologist, the CEO of a medical record software company, and an innovative real estate developer, but that's not your day job right now. You started creating your own WordPress websites and social media properties 6 years ago, and then rolled all of this valuable experience into the creation of your new company, Newtrix. Judy and her team work with small businesses and entrepreneurs to help them create and fuse their brands into state-of-the-art websites that easily tie into social media. Not only do they set up creative, usable sites, they train their clients to use social media tools to reach their business goals. And if you have one of those tired old brochure websites, you can take heart in the fact that at Newtrix, they believe it's never too late. And I also want to say, Judy, you helped me create my website. And I want to thank you for that. I've had so many people, compliment me on my site, and usually I take the credit for it. But on the radio show, I'll give you the credit for it.
Thank you.
Well, welcome to the show. And let's just start by, you have this amazing background of you recreating yourself. So let's talk about that. And how do you get from being a clinical psychologist to being an entrepreneur to running, being a social media expert?
Well, what happened was really my ex-husband wrote a software back when I was doing psychology, and I did worked for some major healthcare companies doing marketing and also had a private practice. But my ex-husband wrote a software program that did medical records for psychiatric hospitals, and somebody had to run the company. And I didn't even use the computer at that time, because as a psychologist, you don't really need to or didn't need to back in the day. And that was in the day when you only had one computer in a household. So I jumped in and started that business, got a bunch of SBIR funding, took it from DOS to Windows to MySQL. When I first started the company, some financial guy said, well, Judy, when you get to a certain level, you're going to want a real CEO to take over. And I was so offended. And then when we got to about 20 people and we're on our, umpty dump, redo, I was like, where is that real CEO? Mm-hmm. So I did find a real CEO. He took it to the next level, and we sold the company. But I didn't want to go back to sitting in a little room with people all day long. So what I really loved doing as a hobby was building buildings. Mm-hmm. And so I did a lot of loft developments in Atlanta and had a lot of fun with that. But I did my own websites and graphic design. And so one time back in the day, I put my name into Google, Googled myself, my business, and what came up was my dog's blog on Dogster. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know that Dogster was a blog. So mm-hmm. I went to all my friends, why did this happen? Why did that happen? Somebody finally said, well, it's because it's a blog and it has frequently added content. And so what I did was I thought, wow, so frequently added content, so you're current project gets to stay on the front page, and when you've got a new project, it doesn't go in the trash. It just gets mm-hmm. moved to down below or someplace, and it's better for search engines. Oh my God, everybody's going to want this, and I've got to learn how to do it. So I learned for myself and saw the writing on the wall shortly thereafter with the real estate market. And so I had more and more time on my hands as I didn't want to build another thing I had to sell. So I started, because I can't help it, because of the psychology background, helping all my friends and family with their businesses, coaching them and helping them create WordPress websites and showing them what to do with them. And before long, I looked around. I'm like, wow, I think I have a business here. Mm-hmm. I'd go to the coffee shop and I'm a loud talker. I'd come home with two or three people that said, oh, could I have your card? Mm-hmm. So it dawned on me that this was a new day. Mm-hmm. You know, there was new technology. All the social media stuff was hitting it big, and that everybody was going to want this. And so I started New Tricks almost 3 years ago. And I've been having a ball. You know, I love the clients that I'm working with, and I work with small businesses and entrepreneurs. I don't like to work with big companies. I don't like to work with committees. Mm-hmm. And I love to help people take their business to the next level.
So how much of your clinical psychology background do you use with your clients?
You know, I just was meeting with some people that were web designers, and I asked them, well, has anybody ever come over to your office and had to go to the bathroom and throw up because they were so overwhelmed with this process? And they said no. I said, well, has anybody ever, you know, had, you know, anyway, people come to me. And I don't know what happens, but it's a big experience putting yourself out in the world, mm-hmm. and getting your business launched. And they come to me with all sorts of different reactions to that. Mm-hmm. Some people get angry, you know, that they're angry that they have to do this. And so now I realize they're not angry with me, but sometimes I feel like they are. Mm-hmm. Some people just are overwhelmed. I've had people cry when we're finished, that they feel like they have a place in the world, that it makes them legitimate. Mm-hmm. It's really an amazing process, but I think most web designers don't notice that.
With your background, you probably do. So as a new business owner, and I realize you're a serial entrepreneur, what are some of the bold goals that you're setting now for your business?
Well, my largest goal is not to get big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done that before. I don't like to manage people. I really think that I found a great business for myself that combines psychology or coaching, technology, and design. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get so big that I'm managing people and that I don't get to do the fun parts.
Mm-hmm. I really, and what are the fun parts for you?
The fun parts are really working with a person on their strategy and their messaging, and also creating their graphics, images, logos, whatever they're. Mm-hmm. I really love the design part. So if I get too big, I've got two people that work with me. If we get too big, then I don't get to do the fun things. Mm-hmm. And so it really, you know, it's I'm really happy with where things are. I love to speak, so I've been doing more of that. We'll talk about this when we get to talking about what works. But what I tell people is that if you do your website right, yes, I have all the business that I want right now, but I get to pick the kinds of business that I want to do. I'm not just doing any old business. I was at a portfolio show recently, and I was looking at some of the websites that a friend of mine's doing, and they're just for these little paint stores and this and that, and which is fine, but it's not my right people. Mm-hmm. My right people are, you know, are the people probably that you've got on your radio show. Mm-hmm. You know, they're entrepreneurs. They're people that really are excited about this. And I'm not saying a little paint store couldn't be that. Like I met with some people that have a craft ice cream company, and it's just wonderful to listen to them be excited about where they want to take their company and how they want to position it and so forth. And those are the kinds of people that I really like to work with. So mm-hmm. I guess it's less about what industry or what business they're in, but their passion, their enthusiasm, and their willingness to try new things to grow their business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's pretty clear that you know, what you're about is certainly not necessarily getting big, because you love to get your hands wet and dirty in the work. But it's also fairly clear, and this is fairly true of transformational leaders, that you have a pretty clear vision of who your ideal client is. And that what you're looking for is a sense of passion and energy, and that you absolutely love working with these clients. And that's a big part of the work and the joy of the work for you in mm-hmm. your business.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, very, very good. Given the lots of different careers that you've had, and you know, now particularly some of the younger folks entering their careers, you know, the data says that they'll have multiple careers. What is the common thread that you've seen among these various careers that kind of points you to a sense of passion that you have or a sense of purpose that you have?
Well, I think it's following your passion, whatever it is, and continuing to learn. Mm-hmm. I was at a bookstore not too long ago, and there was a guy sitting on the floor with this giant PHP book, and I'm like, I need to get the little book over here, WordPress for Dummies. And I said, by the way, what are you doing with that big book? And he said, well, he had worked at a big department store in the art as an art director, and his department was being cut out, and so he thought he'd teach himself web design. I'm like, oh, that's a bad way to go about it. Yeah. But it just dawned on me, he said, and then all the people that worked for him only knew one piece of graphic design. And that is really a killer. So my biggest advice and what I've noticed is that you shouldn't just be complacent and to keep finding things that are interesting and explore them, because you never know where it's going to lead. Mm-hmm. And then it's just, you know, so all of my things have, when I was doing building, what I realized was that I really wasn't just a builder, because if I was, I'd be out buying these little foreclosed houses and turning them around and being a slumlord. But that doesn't interest me. That's not where my passion is. My passion was creating spaces for people. Mm-hmm. And
you're kind of still creating spaces for people now, right?
Exactly. So that didn't change. It's creating wonderful spaces for people that are very specific to them. So it's, you know, so I'd say to people that, to not to worry about where you went to college or what you're doing, and just to throw yourself into whatever you're doing, whether it's working at a coffee shop or whatever. My daughter went to work right out of college, went back to work in a restaurant. And the first day, the chef says, well, the dishwashers didn't show up, and everybody was mumbling, complaining, and she said, oh, it's not hard to wash dishes. And then she washed dishes all that day and made an immediate friend of the chef. Well, within 2 months, she was the general manager of that restaurant at 24. Mm-hmm. So that's really the thing, is keep your passion, keep going, and do whatever it is the next right thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you for sharing that story, and we'll come back to you. I want to get some of the tips, particularly since you work with entrepreneurs, about what you share with them on social media. Our next guest, and let me introduce our listeners to you, Diane Kaufman. Diane, you have a fascinating background. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You've had, 26 years with Marriott International. You retired 4 years ago. You've spent 20 years living and working in Atlanta. And it says you began your business as a part-time hobby, which is really interesting. And then realized that vacation rentals is a perfect combination for all the Marriott training that you got and your passion. So tell us, and now it looks like you've grown your business from one home and one mermaid to 47 vacation homes and 30 more people, which is maids and men. So welcome to the show. And Diane is the CEO of Mermaid Cottages.
Head
mermaid. Yes. Wow. I've never had to ever introduce somebody with that title. That's great.
Well, when it's your own business, you can create your own title.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And how nice. So you're out of Tybee Island, Georgia.
Yes.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got from Marriott to more people.
I was lucky enough to work for what I think is the best lodging company in the world, Marriott.
Well, Mermaid too.
Mermaid, correct.
Now.
And was home office based in Atlanta for a number of years. And after 9/11, called my boss and said, I'm moving to Tybee Island, where I'm going to do my job, because my job involved traveling all around the world, actually.
What was your job?
I did sales and marketing training for our hotels on destination marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was based in Tybee Island, working out of my home office. And I'd also begun, while in Tybee, buying and selling homes, mm-hmm. buying old cottages, doing restoration, And flipping them, basically.
Mm-hmm. And this was sort of while you were still working?
I was working full-time. I had my BlackBerry, I had my laptop, I had my Marriott job, and I had my
side gig. And you know what? I want to talk a little bit more about that as we go on, because there are so many people now that you talk to who are in corporate jobs that are always are looking for what that side gig might be. So it's brilliant that you have that story to share.
And I loved Marriott. I still love Marriott. But I was reaching the point where when you've traveled every place you can imagine and you're in a five-star hotel and you wish you were back on Tybee Island in your little beach community, you realize it's time to retire. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky enough that the jobs were changing and my next job that I was supposed to move on to meant moving back to D.C. and 90% travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had begun my side hobby job 2 years prior to that with one of my friends who does restoration on Tybee, and she had a client, and the client was going to make it a vacation rental. And part of my side job before was I'd have a vacation rental that I was managing on my own because I'd bought the home. And these were two doctors in Tennessee, and they basically said, after I gave them all my tips and suggestions, well, we want you to manage our house. I said, well, I can't. I have a full-time career where I travel. He said, no, you can do it. So I took on the house.
It's always great getting a first client, you know, where they force you to kind of.
And literally, I said, well, this would be a hobby for me. Mm-hmm. So I created a website. Before I knew Judy, I brought in someone to do a website for me. And we fluffed the house and took some great pictures and had within 2 weeks the house rented for the entire summer.
Mm-hmm.
They were thrilled. They bought two more houses. They said, make them mermaid cottages. And we made mermaid cottages. Their friends bought two more houses. So now I'm juggling traveling the world for Marriott with managing houses, again, with my BlackBerry and a spreadsheet all over the world. So when my job opportunity came to retire, it was the natural fit. It could not have been more perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said in my information, it really is the perfect blend of Mr. Marriott's philosophy of running hotels around the world, managing people and managing guests, with being in a destination that I love and I'm passionate about.
Wow. So these are cottages. So tell us a little bit more about the business that you're in.
I have a real niche.
Okay.
And part of what I've learned from my Marriott training was Tybee has a broad range of condos, big beach houses, little small cottages, and I wanted to have a very specific niche,
mm-hmm.
just like my title of my business. I didn't want to be Tybee something. I wanted to be a name that would evoke a feeling, which is mermaid cottages. So my homes are all vintage cottages or historic houses, mostly pet-friendly, because that's, again, part of what I do is some of my nonprofit work, mostly pet-friendly. All have internet, all have Wi-Fi, which, again, you feel that everyone should have that, but not everybody does, because, again, my guests are us, people that need to have a place to cocoon, to relax, and to have Wi-Fi so they can work.
Mm-hmm.
And Tybee is a great destination. It's a great little community. It's a true small town that happens to have a beach.
Mm-hmm.
So there are characters there. There are wonderful people there. And again, it's 20 minutes from Savannah, so it's the combination of Savannah, which is fabulous, and Tybee, which is a small little quirky beach town.
Tell us a bit about what's next for you and kind of what are some of the bold goals that you're setting. Are you kind of wanting to remain small like Judy?
Well, when Judy said that, I kind of was nodding my head because my goal is also not to be big. I am really bigger than what I want to be. But I keep having owners coming to me. I've never once advertised for a home. Having them come to me that if it fits my niche or if their story is compelling, I want them to be part of my collection. But what I've been doing, and Judy's been helping me with this is how we got involved, is I'm doing now business consulting for other small vacation rental companies. Part of my Marriott training was business coaching, so I'm able to now combine business coaching with my desire to help other people, with a desire to also help grow what I'm doing but not grow my own business. So, and that has been wonderful. Judy and I have a couple of joint clients, and it's been an awful lot of fun.
Oh, wow. That's great. You know, I'm intrigued, and maybe we will also come back to this discussion. I'm intrigued by a couple things. One is this idea of you know, kind of having a side gig. Was it ever? At what point did you realize, wow, this could really be kind of a retirement gig?
After about a year.
Okay.
When I realized that I knew what I needed to do to make this into a real business. Mm-hmm. Just a matter of taking my full attention and making that. And if my job had not changed, I probably would have retired probably a year earlier mm-hmm. and done this, because I knew that I had a business. Mm-hmm. I had a profitable business, not just for me, but for my homeowners mm-hmm. and also my mer people, mm-hmm. my mermaids and mermen.
Mm-hmm. Now, who are your mer people? Tell me more about
that. I have this great team of people who are mostly young retirees. Mm-hmm. I have a stockbroker who is in charge of my business, my financial part. I have a retired nurse in charge of my housekeepers. I've got a retired AJC newspaper editor who does my homeowner relations. I have housekeepers that are, some of them are summertime people, a lot mm-hmm. of school teachers. Mm-hmm. But Tybee seems to have a lot of people, again, in their 50s and 60s, who have retired to Tybee but are too young to fully retire. Mm-hmm. So my MER people are quite a few. My social media person that helps me out is another retired Marriott executive mm-hmm. who used to manage reservation centers around the world. And now David helps me out with my social media and has learned that and has excelled at that as well.
Mm-hmm. So for those folks listening in around, you know, wanting to develop side gigs, mm-hmm. you know, you're in a corporation, you know, you're not going to be here either by your own volition
right.
or other circumstances.
Correct.
And you want to have a side gig, what advice do you have for them?
The biggest advice I have is don't leave your job quite yet. Take the time to really explore what your passion may be. So if you love cooking, don't quit your corporate job. Maybe take a week in cooking school and see if you really want to enjoy that. And that's what I did. Again, it just sort of fell into place for me, but I do give this advice to people quite a bit, is don't quit your job until you know what your passion is and explore that passion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think it's a big...
And how
part.
Do you know? So for somebody listening in, how would they know that you can make money at this passion? I mean, lots of people, I have a passion for chocolate, but, you know, I haven't quite figured out how to make money for that.
Part of the coaching I do is, I mean, I have a lot of people that want to start a vacational business is we have the conversation. Okay, you love chocolate. Do you love eating chocolate? Do you love maybe making chocolate? Do you love maybe marketing chocolate? How can you take that passion mm-hmm. and figure out how to make a job out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And a job's the wrong term. How do you make a business, a career, a passion out of it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get up every morning and I can't wait to do what I'm going to do today. I got to drive to Atlanta and be on a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how exciting is this?
Right, right.
So
that's awesome. That's great advice. And you know, if people want to connect with you, what is a particularly related to this kind of stuff? What's a good place they can connect with you? Do you have like a website or something?
Oh, I have a fabulous WordPress website, which is mermaidcottages.com.
Okay.
And like Judy was talking about, when I finally created my website, it was like giving birth, because you're so proud of this reflects you. And my website reflects everything about me, the colors, the logo, the mermaid on my logo. I was Googling. I happened to find she was actually a version of a 1955 Olympic poster. I have no clue why they had a mermaid on it. And so we took that as our base and stylized it quite a bit. So, you know, every part of my website truly reflects myself and my passion.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great. What a great story. Thank you.
Thank
you for sharing that. And let us, we'll come back actually to a discussion about how you're utilizing social media and what you're sharing with your clients. I'm going to now introduce Cynthia Rogers. Cynthia, let me read a little bit from your bio. Cynthia's a digital business and e-commerce strategist focused on growth and innovation. She's applied her transformational skills to startups and turnarounds as both an executive and entrepreneur for Fortune 100 and venture-backed companies. Besides helping companies do business online, she's an expert at building collaborative partnership ecosystems and high-energy, high-functioning teams. Her leadership roles and projects in consumer and business categories range from healthcare, retail, and media to hospitality, telecom, and financial services. Cynthia's worked with such brands as Verizon, Humana, JCPenney, Zagat, HP, Avon, Procter & Gamble, General Mills, Turner Entertainment, NBC TV, and the European Union. Wow, that's a pretty large group of Fortune 100 companies. Welcome to the show, Cynthia.
Thanks, Hannah. It's great to be here.
So give us, you know, kind of the same, it's the same drill. Give us a little bit about your background and what got you here to where you are today.
Sure. So I help companies conduct business online, whether they're connecting more with customers, selling to customers, or streamlining their business operations. And the way that I got into it is when I started, first of all, I come from an IBM family, so I was always computer friendly, although I wasn't an engineer. Mm-hmm. And when I started in marketing, television was king. And everything that we wanted to do at that time in terms of research, connecting with audiences, learning what they wanted, and selling them things cost a lot and took a lot of time. Then computers and email came to our desktops, and I saw the ability to change everything we were doing and the way we did it, and, by the way, bring the cost way down, because there was so much in those days we couldn't do because of cost. And I've been working in it ever since in one form or another.
So through the evolution, it seems like you've worked with a lot of big clients, largely, you know, kind of Fortune 100 kinds of companies. And my understanding is you've had a advertising background as well.
Yes, it's really more marketing with advertising agencies, but it's definitely, I've worked with a lot of agencies and I've worked on the client side as well and been an entrepreneur myself.
Okay, so talk to us a little bit about your various experiences. I know when the last time we spoke, you talked about doing big company and then being an entrepreneur and then going back to big company. Yes. What is that experience like?
So for me, it's relatively seamless. I think that the only difference is the size of the team that you're working with to develop these strategies. And then on the other side, it's the size of the client team that you're meeting with. You may be meeting with an entrepreneurial project with three people or four people on the client side. On the corporate side, you're never meeting with less than six at a time, and generally rooms full of more than that. So those are the big differences, I think. And also the larger corporate projects just take longer time, more resources, more time, more people.
So dare I ask, which is more fun, corporate or entrepreneur? I'm going to put you in the hot seat.
You know, it's I've got to say it's 50-50. I think that you do a lot more education with the smaller entrepreneurial or family-owned firms. It can be a lot of fun. It can be a lot of headbanging. And then, as everyone knows, on the corporate side, you've got more resources and more playing field to play with. And yet there can be a lot of headbutting because of other constraints. So it's six of one, half dozen of the other. And I think that it's, I love doing both so that I have a mix rather than being limited to one or the other. I'm happy that I have that capability.
And what about, as you look back at, through your career, being in corporations on the client side or on the agency side, but also as an entrepreneur, what have been some of the passions that you've felt like, you know, really drove you?
So driving passions, I think that my greatest driving passion is the desire to invent the future. I love inventing new things. I love the capability of doing that in a way that makes sense. My undergraduate degree was in painting. So as an artist, you get to invent things all the time. In applying that to business, we have the opportunity, especially now with all of the new technologies that are available, to constantly be inventing the future.
And so give us a sense of what you've invented recently.
I'm currently in the process of taking a small company that does a phenomenal job in social commerce offline, online, to do social commerce online. And it's a very exciting, very rewarding experience. It's a great company. The people are terrific. They have a huge opportunity in front of them. And moving them literally from paper ordering to online is a huge initiative. So that's very exciting. And on the other side of the coin, one of the things that I've been really happy about recently is a couple of years back, I led a team doing the enterprise digital strategy for JCPenney. And what we did at that time was allow that company to completely replatform, to replace its entire systems, that's put it in a position to hire the head of stores of Apple and the head of marketing from Target so that they can completely reinvent and reposition JCPenney, which is a very old line retailer we all know. Without the project that we did a couple of years back, setting the stage for that, they would not have the tools to work with that they do now so they can accomplish their goal of reinventing that company.
And that's a big challenge, I would imagine, given the multiple reinventions they've tried to go through in that company.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, let's segue to just a discussion on social media, and feel free to, you know, anybody jump in. One of the biggest challenges that I think face everybody in social media is, A, there is so much of it. Everybody's talking about it. You feel like you've missed the boat if you're not in it. And yet, you have no idea about what actually works to move the needle. Now, there's the good thing about social media is that there's lots of lots of measures that you can measure and track. But what you don't know is how much of this is actually, you know, going to give you cash to the bottom line. There, you can track site visits and you can track number of eyeballs and all that kind of good stuff. But how does it really help me grow my business? So my challenge to our social media experts here is, if I'm an entrepreneur and I have a small business, let's start with some kind of a service business. What do I need to know? Like, tell me the three things that I must do if each of you, from your point of view, in order to really take advantage.
Well, I'm actually doing a webinar on this very topic on Thursday night. People, if you're interested, can sign up for the webinar. It's a free webinar at newtricks.com. But what I find is that there are a lot of people out there doing social media, and unless you have a really great website that in the first 2 to 3 seconds that somebody comes to that site, that they know they're in the right place, and then that you do things on the website that convert people into taking that next action, whether it be signing up for a newsletter so that people will go back to your site. That's an important thing to put on there. But there have to be easy ways for people to connect and start working with you. Like Diana and I were just talking about her consulting business, and she was noticing that I have the three website packages on my website. It says, here are three packages, and my business is New Tricks. So there's a young pup, the working dog, and the best in breed. And that has been really important way for me to have clients come to me who already know. They might like to think they're a young pup, but they know they're a working dog, or they know who's the best in breed. And so we get to cut through a bunch of that. They don't have to be nervous about asking me how much my services are because it says starts at whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I've made it easy for people to work with me. Mm-hmm. And so that's been huge. So all the social media in the world is not going to really get you business unless you have a website that converts that traffic into whatever actions that you want them to take.
Okay.
So that's my basis.
Okay. So what I heard you say, the top three things: get a great website, make sure the content and everything is great there, make sure that there's a very clear call to action that helps make the website sticky for your kind of your clients. And then the third piece was around make it easy to do business with you. What is it that you're doing to generate traffic to your website?
Well, that's interesting. The first year I was of my business, and it'll be 3 years in January. The first year of my business, I was so busy learning how to do this business as a commercial web designer, because before, if I didn't know how to do something and it was for me, I'd just say, well, I didn't want to do it that way anyway, and I'd find another way to do it. So it was like, do as I say, not what I do. So I was on Twitter and I was doing social media and blogging, but not enough. Mm-hmm. And then the second year, I started my newsletter, which has been a huge thing for me, a personal newsletter, not an RSS feed, not whatever, but a little personal message for me and one social media tip a week. Mm-hmm. And I've grown that thing amazingly in the past year, and I get lots and lots of feedback from that. So that's been huge. And then the third thing really is Twitter. And I get probably more traffic from Twitter and Facebook than I do, probably even Twitter, Facebook, and Google. And then when you have a WordPress website and you've had it going with a blog, integrated blog, and you've had it going for a few years, you end up with hundreds of blog posts. Mm-hmm. And so each one of those blog posts is like a Google lottery ticket, comes up separately on the search engine. So I have posts from 2 years ago that still get 150 readers a day, mm-hmm. and things like that. And so you can see how geometrically that mm-hmm. adds up to mm-hmm. a lot of traffic. Mm-hmm.
So the tips then and tricks for our listeners would be keep your website really and blogs really current. Certainly utilize Twitter and Facebook. And then consider doing some kind of a mailed, what do you call it, an email?
An email newsletter. I mean, people say, oh, email is dead.
Do people actually read that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
you have to have a catchy title.
It's, you know, some people don't read it every week, but, you know, they save them. And my brother-in-law and sister live on a sailboat, and my brother-in-law was saying, oh, all of your sisters are so mean that you don't read our blog. And I'm like, Ron, don't feel bad. Nobody reads anybody's blog because we forget. Mm-hmm. And so the whole purpose of that newsletter is to develop your tribe, is to develop those people that are passionate about you and what you do. And it's like, certainly there are other WordPress tutorials or business coaching out there from lots of people. I didn't invent anything that I say. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe some things, mm-hmm. but they want to hear it from me. Mm-hmm. They trust, they know, like, and trust me. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't send out that newsletter, I wouldn't be on their radar. And the interesting thing is a year ago, I went to a social media conference, and I really don't like to go to a whole lot of these things because I'm too busy, actually. But I went to it, and it was, you know, it was like everybody vying for the same, you know, attention and whatever, and I didn't know all that many people. And so when it rolled around this past year, I almost didn't go, except that it was at the Carter Center, and I thought, well, it's in my neighborhood, so I have to go. And it was like, Judy, oh my God, there's Judy Knight. Oh, Judy. I was like, I felt like I was at the
celebrity
at the prom and the you know, getting ready to be crowned homecoming queen or something. And I thought, well, what happened? And then it's like, whoa. Newsletter. That newsletter really does make a difference in that I'm committed, that it comes out every Wednesday morning. People can count on it. Whether they read it or not, I'm still in their, you know, in their consciousness a lot.
That's interesting. That's interesting. So a lot of people don't do that kind of stuff because they say, who's got the time to read it? But you're right. You know, you still pop up every Wednesday in their inbox, and you're top of mind for them. What? Be honest. How much time does it take to write this newsletter?
Well, I have to do it. It comes out on Wednesday morning, and I have to do it on the weekend when I'm not stressed because it takes about 2 hours, mm-hmm. and then it also then rolls into being a blog post. And so, if I do it on the weekend, it's easy to do. If I wait and think that I'm going to get it done on Monday or Tuesday or once the crush of the week starts, then it's the shorter the time, the more time it takes because I'm stressed about it.
How many people do you have reading your newsletter?
Probably about 1,100. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are people that have like 50,000 people reading their newsletter, and I look at those figures and I go, oh, but, you know, I don't know what I'd do if I have 50,000 people. Seth Godin says, if you have 1,000 people that are in your niche and really that you got those people by blood, sweat, and tears, that they're your people, that is better than, you know, a whole gajillion people. And so I'm really happy with my people.
And how do you know that your people are generating business for you other than just celebrity at the Carter Center?
Because they write back to me and they refer people to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I send that newsletter out, people say, you know, it's hard. I don't get all that many comments on my website. It's hard to get a comment on, you know, 30 WordPress plugins you can count on. Mm-hmm. But when I send out something, I get people send it back to me like I wrote just to them, or I hear that mm-hmm. they said, oh, you were in San Francisco and I got the email newsletter and I knew you were sending it out to everybody, but it felt like you were just sending it just to me. But they refer people to me. They mm-hmm. pick up the phone, they send people to me, and that's how I know they're reading it.
So how much business and how much personal? You know, you always kind of, what's the right balance in your newsletters? Because you kind of people sort of, you know, people want to certainly hear from your expertise, but they also want to get to know Judy. What is that balance look like?
Finding your voice and finding that balance is a huge topic, especially for me and for my clients. And it's different for everybody. And I think I've found I'm finding my stride on doing that in a way that I'm not like, well, it's like warm today, or it's, you know, here it is, you know, summer. You know, it's like, okay, enough about the weather, Judy. And so I've been able to really incorporate more kind of personal story that leads into some kind of tidbit, like about my mother starting a business with who she was about to die a few years ago. And she's a marathon runner and stuff, and she ended up with some lung thing with 4 weeks to live. We thought that she would never going to make it. And then she did make it. And then she's almost 80, and she loves to shell, and so she started making shell items. And then the next thing we know, she has a business called Krabby Ann's, and she's doing art shows, making $2,000 a pop at these art shows, selling this shell
Can
art.
Can you say, see, she sells?
She sells, she shells. And I said, you know, so our motto is, it's never too late.
It's
and I think
late.
My mother is a good testament to that motto, that, you know, it isn't too late, and it's like what we were talking about. You follow a passion and you find you have a business model and you go for it.
Awesome. Well, how about you, Diane? What are your kind of top three tips for people who are entrepreneurs to figure out, you know, if there's only three things I got to do, what are those three things?
My goal with my social media is to create raving fans.
Okay.
I'm building my tribe as well. And the first tip is you've got to start with social. You have to start. You can't talk about a Facebook page. You can't talk about a Twitter account. You can't talk about a blog. You've got to start.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's you're a small business and you've got to take the time, you have to start. I do all three things. I do Facebook. I do Twitter. I do a blog. And I also do, again, through Judy's recommendation, I do e-blasts and in e-newsletters. Mm-hmm. And I was also one of those like, oh, no, who really reads these e-newsletters? Well, I read Judy's e-newsletter, and I look forward to it, and I get a whole bunch of them. And so I don't do them every week, but they're very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
We've had
What's the frequency that you do yours?
I just started about a month ago, and I've done two so far. Mm-hmm. We did one, which we got a tremendous response back. We've got about, I think, 1,800 people on our distribution list.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a story asking people that if they booked their reservations for next year between now and year end, they'll get the 2011 prices for 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And we booked, I think I told Judy, 17 or 18 reservations mm-hmm. for next year.
Mm-hmm.
But my other big win is, and this was a huge win about the power of Facebook, we have Facebook pages for Mermaid Cottages and also for our individual homes.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, we don't have a full 47, but one of my homes is Paula Deen's. Paula Deen has a beach retreat, which we manage her beach home, called Y'all Come In.
Mm-hmm.
And Paula has a huge following on Facebook, and on her Y'all Come In Facebook page, we've got about 4,000 or 5,000 people.
Wow.
Which is, well, and Paula.
This is her vacation rental?
Her Facebook page, I think, maybe has 350,000 followers. So we've done things on Paula's, like help us name, do names for things on Paula's Facebook page, Paula's vacation rental Facebook page. We did a Facebook post last week through Paula's office saying, and we talk in Paula's language,
mm-hmm.
saying that we are doing a fall promo for the next 4 months where it's very quiet. We booked in 2 days 15 reservations. And again, there's an example of raving fans, connecting with people. So we use social media, and that's probably my big tip is use social media to connect.
Mm-hmm.
Our whole goal with our social media, our blogging, is talking about Tybee, talking about our experiences, talking about our guests, so that if you're in Atlanta in a high-rise building and happen to go to my blog and you read about the fact the sea turtles, we've had more nests this past season than ever before, or talk about this past weekend we did a Veterans Day where we hosted 15 soldier families as our guests. So we try and create a community of people via our social media. So start, do it on a regular basis. We post every single day. And I have someone that helps me with this because I'm big enough to do it. But when I first began, it was me doing my little Facebook posting at midnight, but I knew people would read it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't do any print media. I'm mm-hmm. a huge, huge social media fan because
mm-hmm.
I see the results
mm-hmm.
in dollars and cents.
Mm-hmm. And obviously you're able to track them back into
yes.
reservations.
Yes. So for my business, it's very, I'm able to do that. But also through Google Analytics, you're able to track how many people come to your website, how many people come to you know, come to your blog on Facebook. I mean, how brilliant is Facebook? You can rerun ads. I do run ads on Facebook. I think I spend $12 a week. And you can show the number of click-throughs you have, impressions, and it's just, it's so easy. Mm-hmm. Once you start, you got to start.
Okay, great. So that's your tip.
That's my
tip. Get started.
Start and do it, yes.
Do it. Okay. Cynthia?
So, let's see. My top three are, first of all, the thought leadership. If you're running a service business, depending on, in my business as a consultant, thought leadership is very important. Putting out there your product, which is your brains. I do that by Twitter. Mm-hmm. 140 character blog. It's simple. It's fast. It's quick. It's topical. It's relevant. You can point to things that are going on. I generally, because my clients and potential clients want to know about innovation and innovation in the digital world, I will point to articles, events, news, and so forth around those topics with my Twitter. The second one is recommendations. People really look to recommendations, and social makes recommendations, ratings, reviews, depending on how you're using them, possible. Mm-hmm. And they're the things that people look to for making decisions and making evaluations.
Mm-hmm. So give me an example of something like that.
Well, something as simple as our own LinkedIn pages saying, you know, this is what this person, this consultant, in my case, here's what Cynthia has done for us. Mm-hmm. Here's the nuance. Here's how successful. Here's what she brought to it extra. Mm-hmm. So all of that detail and color that you can't necessarily say for yourself or that's a validation. Mm-hmm. In a larger extreme sense, Amazon. The way that they sell books with ratings and reviews, mm-hmm. and customer comments, mm-hmm. that's very much about social commerce. Mm-hmm. And I think the last is engagement tools. When you bring someone to a site and you're looking for action, one of the things Judy brought up is you know, actionable packages. But if they're not ready to buy, you want them to engage in another way. Mm-hmm. So whether it's gamification, whether it's more information that they would like, loyalty points, rewards, coupons, and so forth. And if it's not at that consumer level, backing it off a little bit to other ways to interact with them and engage, even mm-hmm. by way of conversation, mm-hmm. answering their questions, giving them more information.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the tools? You all talked about engaging your community or your tribe. And, you know, these days nobody has time, right, to comment back. You know, I can't tell you how frustrating it is for me. I like these, what I think are beautiful blog posts, and I get zero comments. And at first I used to take it personally, and now I've just decided I'm not. So what are some tips that you can advise our listeners about how to really truly engage? You know, in your email, for instance, if you're doing email blasts or blogs or that kind of thing.
Well, especially on Twitter, you know, a lot of people when they're new at this only push their information out. And I think it's really important, like Cynthia said, to do things that are other than just you. You know, provide a service for them, share great info, good articles, things. I hardly ever even go to Google Reader or anything anymore because I get so much curated information from Twitter, mm-hmm. from my Twitter friends. But that's a big thing, is being on social media and being a part of other people's sharing, retweeting their information and engaging with them, talking to them. And then what happens is you build up a bunch of people that will then come comment who are interested in what you're doing and will then go read your post. Mm-hmm. And until I had that little core group of people that would do that, I felt like the same thing. It's mm-hmm. like, is there anybody out there? I'm seeing all these hits on my website, but who's reading it? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have to have that, first of all, knowing that they are reading it. And that's part of that finding your voice, too, is trusting that there are people out there and that they're reading what you're writing. Mm-hmm. And then who are these people? Mm-hmm. But, you know, the engaging with them on social media has been a huge part in me, establishing myself as more of getting that thought leadership out there. Mm-hmm. And then the blog, you know, actually the blog post is another way of putting that information out there, sharing information that I think people would want to know about, like I said before, in my own voice. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of different audiences for my website. It's people that want to get their own business going online, but it's also people that I'm the coordinator of the local WordPress users meetup group. We have 900 members in town, and I do the monthly meetings, and I'm putting on the WordPress WordCamp Atlanta in February. And so I have people that are learning how to do what I do. Mm-hmm. And then a big passion is teaching graphic designers and other people that were doing designs, but then sending them off to other people to have them code, that you can actually do this yourself. So I try to mix it up and give people in all of those different categories a little something in terms of my blog content. Mm-hmm. But the engaging with them really has happened a lot on Twitter and Facebook. Mm-hmm.
Could I just add to what Judy just brought up? Such a great point that I'd love for us mm-hmm. to highlight, mm-hmm. because everyone talks about social media, and so you have to be on social media, but it's still the fundamentals that count. And one of the things that is fundamental is the customer, the end user. There's such a tendency, and especially from the old advertising mentality, to push messages. And social has totally flipped everything upside down. So it really is about the listener, the consumer, and what they value, what's useful to them. So instead of pushing messages about me, my company, and so forth, giving them value, giving them additional information that they're interested in, giving them the games, the points, whatever it is. So it's very much about know your audience, know what they're interested in, ask them because you can, mm-hmm. and give them that value.
I like to say that it used to be that on websites you told people what you did. We do this, we do that. Now people read that and see blah, 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 blah,
it's
blah.
It's not about me anymore.
And so you have to cut through that. You have to tell them what you do in like a line or two, and by the whole overall gestalt of your site. But then you have to show them what you do mm-hmm. by the stories that you tell, the mm-hmm. the articles that you're posting, the fun things that they can do, whatever it is that your site's about. But it's all about show them, don't tell them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about the value that you're creating for them, even during that 2 to 4 minutes that they're spending on the site, on your site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the old storytelling technique. Everything is about storytelling. Make me care. Show me what it means for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, on those great words of wisdom, I want to thank each one of you. Unless there is any burning new insight that you have, I wanted to really thank each one of you for the wisdom that you've shared. And I want to especially say that, you know, you're welcome back as each of your businesses grows, or rather grows in terms of the quality of the business rather than necessarily the size of the business. You know, please be welcome back and to share more insight about what you've learned about being an entrepreneur and being social media mavens. And the world of social media changes so quickly that I'm sure if we do this show in a year from now, there will probably be lots of new information for us to share. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah.
One point, just looking at the three of us, this is something, a very interesting point. Social media is not about 20-something-year-olds. We are three women who are not 25 years old. I can speak for myself and probably both of you. And I think partly when I talk about Judy, when I talk to my clients about her, is I say, the great part about Judy is, yes, you could have your, you know, college sophomore do your website and social media. But Judy is a business person who understands her audience, but understands social media. And I think it's pretty neat that we three have embraced it. And I mean, it is a valuable part of our business. And we're not, you know, fresh out of college. Mm-hmm. And for an entrepreneur, again, like you mentioned, people that are maybe unhappy in their corporate life, and how do I go to the next step? I think that's an important part, is it's never too late to start with this sort of thing, mm-hmm. social media.
Mm-hmm. Never too late to reinvent yourself.
Correct.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Diane.
And with that, this is your host, Hannah Anam, signing off. Please join us again next week. We will have yet another group of transformational leaders.